the Advanced Practice Weekly podcast. So this week I have Emma Rose from Great Ormond Street Hospital. So this podcast is going to be a little bit different because we're hearing from someone in a slightly different profession than we're used to. So welcome, Emma. Can you introduce yourself, your role, and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Well, thank you so much for having me. I am a radiographer, as you said, and I work at Great Ormond Street Hospital, and I work in a department called Interventional Radiology. So for those of you who aren't familiar with the world of radiology, radiographers are kind of anything to do with imaging in a hospital. So any kind of MRI scans, CT scans, x-rays, ultrasound scans. And I work in interventional, which is where we kind of use x-rays to guide some operations. So it's kind of a cross between operating theatre and a radiology department. And then I've worked at GOSH for 7 years, and I have, feels like longer, in the last 5 years was appointed to be a clinical specialist radiographer, which means that I now undertake some of the procedures that the doctors traditionally would have. So I place vascular access, I change feeding tubes, do some dilatations, and I kind of look after the whole patient pathways within that. But that's principally my role, is to do the procedures rather than just doing the imaging for the procedures.
Okay, so it's kind of the complete patient care episode all in one go.
Yeah, so we look after the patient first thing in the morning. So we come in and we will check the operating list for that day, so which patients we're responsible for that day. And then we have to kind of look up their history, make sure that they're safe for the procedure. And then we go and meet them and we do the consent as well. So we're part of that whole pathway. So we go and take consent from the patient, answer any questions that they or their family might have. And then we come back and we lead the team brief. So we're kind of in charge of a multidisciplinary team for that day. Because I work with paediatric patients, most of our procedures are under general anaesthetic, where we then lead the anaesthetic team. So we have a full team. There's about 10 to 12 of us on any given day. So we'll do the team brief. We follow the WHO checklist, so kind of to make sure that each procedure is stated and what we're doing safely. And then we proceed to then do the procedures for the patients. And then for a lot of them, we then have to go and see them at the end of the day, check that they're okay, make sure there's been no complications, and then send them on their way.
Wonderful. It also sounds lovely because I think previously you perhaps would have different people doing different aspects of each of that bit. But what's really nice is for the patient and the patient journey is they have that same experienced clinician from start to end. And that just sounds so much better for the patient.
Yeah. And for the awake patients that we do, so a lot of our feeding tube changes we can do awake and it's tolerated very well, even on the little kids. For those, the families have really appreciated that we're the people that they see regularly now, to the point where some of my loyal patients are hilarious. So I was on annual leave and one of the consultants did the tube change list. And then he sent me an email to say that one of the patients was furious that it wasn't me. Where was Emma? And so for me, that is one of my favorite parts of my job, actually, because as a radiographer, traditionally, when we're newly qualified radiographers, we tend to work in x-ray. And in that, you meet a patient for maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, depending on what x-ray they're having done. And you don't ever get that kind of patient bonding. And that's what we do is really important. And our skills lie in getting rapport quickly and gaining a patient's trust. But we don't ever have that kind of bonding that maybe nursing staff have on a ward. So I've really loved getting that better bonding with a patient and being able to really get to know them and know their families. It's really rewarding.
So I guess that expansion of your role has kind of changed your kind of relationship with the patients as well.
Definitely it has,
I think also for paediatric patients as well, there must be something really reassuring to kind of feel really safe in the hands of someone that's going to do that procedure to you. That's probably quite frightening. I think even as an adult, quite frightening.
A lot of them, the tube change patients are the best example because they're awake and it doesn't hurt when we change them, but sometimes it just feels a little bit uncomfortable. And a lot of them will get scared. And I can reassuredly say, well, we did this before. We've done this together before and we know how it works. And then they do build up that trust. So and the families really get to know us and know that if they call us and say the tube's broken, I'm like, don't worry about it. We will sort you out. And it's really rewarding. And it's something that we have really stated as an impact in the benefit of advanced practice, is that we have the time to be able to provide that stability for the patients, which has been really beneficial.
I mean, exactly. And I think for the patients, it's probably so you can't quantify how important that is for them. And like you said, that is really where an advanced practice role really kind of comes into its own, that continuity and that amazing service that gets provided that probably due to restrictions wouldn't be able to be provided otherwise. You really meet a gap where there is no other person to provide that role, which is really, it's quite exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been great.
So obviously very different background to kind of what we're typically used to. So it'd just be great to hear about kind of how you work to the four pillars, like what kind of different things do you do and how your role might look like?
So I think the clinical pillar is normally the easiest to define. It's mm-hmm. we go and do clinical work. Now that doesn't necessarily mean though, hands-on with patients. Like there's a lot of what yeah. we're trying to term non-direct clinical care. So I this morning already have been looking at what patients need to come through, are there any emails over the weekend, is anyone tubes broken, and that still counts as clinical care. It's just that I'm sat on my laptop mm-hmm. doing it rather than directly in front of the patient. So I think the clinical pillar is pretty given, and that for me tends to be 2 long days a week roughly.
Yep.
And then I do what we would call a radiography day, so kind of back to my roots of doing the imaging mm-hmm. and that we believe ticks a few boxes with education and leadership. I think that the education pillar was again fairly straightforward to achieve once you've established in your clinical practice. I think you need to spend a period of time learning your clinical practice.
Yeah.
And then when you get more comfortable with that, I think education comes naturally. So I do some lecturing at London South Bank University. So I'm a visiting fellow there. And I do some lecturing for that. So that's kind of influencing the new generation of radiographers. And at work, that's a given. So when I'm a radiographer, I am a senior member of staff. And one thing that we really believe is helpful is that you can teach a lot of people to do things, but if you don't tell them why they're doing something, then they're less likely to understand. So we try and use my expertise as an operator, as someone doing the procedure, to then improve the imaging while we're doing the procedure, which is benefits the patient. So we always kind of bring it back to the patient. We do something called collimating, which is where we just make the area of the x-ray smaller or bigger, depending on what we need to see. Mm-hmm. And that decreases or increases the radiation dose to the patient. So by explaining what I'm looking at as an operator, that can then help the radiographer understand how to keep the radiation dose down and benefit in the patient. So we do a lot of kind of teaching, sort of ad hoc rather than formal teaching.
Yeah.
And then I think you kind of, as you get known in your role, I'm quite unique nationally. There's not really many other people that can do pediatric IR as a radiographer, but I think as a result, we get asked to speak at study days or at conferences or in webinars. And that's something that we've found really helpful to kind of share our model and to share, because what we want, and I guess exactly what you guys want, is an army of advanced practice people that can just rule the NHS and make it amazing.
Exactly.
So the more we can do to kind of promote how successful we find it. And I think the fact that we're pediatrics really helps sell the cause almost, because I think even in with doctors and with experienced mm-hmm. centers that aren't specialist pediatric centers, if you say a 3 kilo baby, they all kind of shudder and couldn't imagine doing anything on a baby. But then we've got radiographers doing lines on newborns. So it's kind of, it's something that we really try and spread that message, that education, that it's entirely possible if you have the right support and training, but it's entirely possible. The pillar that I yeah. found the hardest to get my head around at first was the leadership pillar. And I think for a long time, I found it, I think I confused it with management. And I found that the distinction between management and leadership yeah. very difficult to work out at first. But as I've grown in my role, I've really come to understand that leadership is just about being visible and being a professional example or kind of helping guide people.
Yes.
So I think leadership comes in a lot of my kind of extracurricular work. So I sit on committees. Now that kind of sits in the hospital. So I sit on the consent board within the hospital. Regionally, I sit in North Central London Advanced Practice Group, and then nationally, I'm on the Association of Paediatric Radiographers. So you kind of, it's about showing examples and being able to influence and help at different levels. It's not,
yes,
I think when you are an advanced practitioner, and especially as you head towards consultant practice, you need to be looking for national influence, not just mm-hmm. local at your trust, because it's a bigger picture than that. So I found that one hard, but eventually I've kind of come to understand what the leadership pillar is. And then research, mm-hmm. again, I, from my knowledge, is probably the one that advanced practitioners find the hardest to find time for and to accomplish.
Absolutely. You're definitely not alone.
Yeah. And it is probably my weakest pillar, in all honesty. But I think that that's a lot of people hear the word research and think it means full funded projects, and it doesn't. It can just be an audit. It could be What I've been doing a lot of recently is supporting other people doing projects. So some of our nursing staff, and helping using my knowledge of what I've learned about research and qualitative, quantitative, all of those kind of trigger words, and helping them do an audit on how we do the checklist, or, you know, things like that. So I think that I think the pillars overlap a lot. So that kind of covers education, leadership and research just by helping one person. So I think they overlap a lot, but it's something that research, I think, is really important to try and make time for, because I think that's probably the neglected pillar for a lot of people, purely because of time constraints, if nothing else.
Definitely. I think so. I mean, from understanding what you're saying there, it sounds like it takes a lot of different formats. And by the sounds of it, as you begin your kind of journey as an ACP, the four pillars looks quite different. And as you progress more into your role and kind of go towards a trajectory of consultant-led practice, what you're doing in those pillars also develops, and you feel more comfortable. And the same way as when you become newly qualified in your role, you know, the clinical feels terrifying, but actually once you've been doing it for a while, you advance and you find it a lot easier and you find your feet within it. So I guess by the sounds of it, you found your feet within those pillars. And I think it's really good to highlight that to people, that it doesn't have to be, like you say, you don't have to be doing a full funded research project to meet that pillar, but also you don't have to be doing everything within it as well. Actually supporting others meets both pillars to reach that. So I think it's a really good way of looking at it and seeing how other people work within their role. But I think it's really important, and also taking the time to reflect on it to realize that you're probably achieving a lot more than you realize.
Definitely. It's not until you have to do like an application for some funding or something that you're like, oh, I actually do quite a lot.
absolutely. And it's lovely to hear that you're representing at a national level as well, and kind of having that visibility, because I think it's really important knowing what scope of practice is out there for people. And just seeing and knowing what you're able to achieve. And like you say, things that other people would find really daunting and terrifying is really great for the profession and for others to see. So it's lovely to see you showcase that. So I'd love to hear about the breadth of your scope. So within your specialty of interventional radiology.
Yeah, it's quite a mouthful.
It is, isn't it? For other radiologists.
You can say IR.
Out there, IR. So what kind of other things or areas are you aware of that radiographers are working in advanced practice roles?
Yeah, so within IR or interventional journey, so sometimes you guys might have heard of an area in radiology called fluoroscopy, which is very common in adults and used in pediatrics as well, where they kind of do sort of what we would call barium studies. So looking at like having the video swallows, any kind of enema, that kind of imaging. And so an IR and fluoroscopy kind of overlap because it's similar equipment really and similar idea. And a lot of radiographers lead that, especially in adults. There's a lot of radiographers that lead barium studies with fluoroscopy. And there's slightly different procedures in adults. So there's a lot of things that we don't really see in pediatrics, like nephrostomy changes. So a lot of adults will have regular nephrostomy changes. And that's something that a lot of radiographers do. There's actually a special interest group called the Extended Role Radiographers and Interventional Procedures, which is quite a mouthful, ERIP, we call it. And that's been a really great forum. I set it up about 2 years ago. It was just during COVID,
amazing.
I think. Because there's... Within radiography, generally, there's quite a lot of established areas of advanced practice. So reporting radiography is probably the most well-known one, where radiographers report on the x-rays that they have taken. And that's been really, there's lots of research behind that. There's lots of funding that's gone into studies for that. There's lots of very well-known reporting radiographers. One just got an MBE in the New Year's Honours.
Wow.
So that's a very well-established pathway, as is breastwork. So breast was one of the original places where radiography advanced practice took off. And that was radiographers that would do the mammogram. Then they would have been trained to do the ultrasound, and then they would take the biopsy themselves. And it was to help improve patient flow. So to do the one-stop clinics where patients would be worried about something and they would go have their imaging, have a biopsy if they needed it, be sent home. And that really improved the patient pathway because it was a real bottleneck. So that's, those two areas are very well established. But in interventional radiology, it's, we think it's something that people have been doing quite quietly in their own centres for a long time, plodding away, doing the odd PICC line insertion. But there hasn't been a kind of formalized pathway like there is with reporting radiography. For reporting radiography, you go to uni, you do a PG cert, and then you can go away and report. But it's not like that with interventional. So I set up the SIG to kind of help make a community. And actually, it's been amazing seeing the different people. Building that up has opened my eyes to the different things people do. So another procedure that a lot of radiographers do in adult practice, which is not common in pediatrics, is ascites drainage. So again, it's about, I think there's a common theme, is it's all about what would help the patients and the patient pathway. So ascites drainage is like a palliative treatment for patients with liver disease or oncology patients.
Yep.
And it can really improve their quality of life.
Yes.
And yep. It's a really quick, simple procedure. But if they have to wait all day to find a slot, if there's not room. So that's something that a lot of the radiographers have been doing, is putting in ascites drains and being able to help those kind of palliative patients.
There's a real breadth across kind of, all the different specialities, which is really interesting. So I guess for people out there, it's that there might be an established pathway for you already in your kind of area of radiography, or it might be that it's just beginning and developing, but that's not to say there's not room for advanced practice. It kind of seems crazy that advanced practice wasn't filling that gap before, because it seems so perfectly done by an advanced practitioner. Radiographers have a kind of a separate way of looking at advanced practice, as well as the kind of the Health Education England multi-professional framework. So can you tell us a little bit about the Society of Radiographers and what kind of that entails and their processes?
So the Society and College of Radiographers is the equivalent of the RCN on one side. So it has two prongs. So it has the Society of Radiographers is the kind of union side, and the College of Radiographers is the kind of educational, influencing national debates and working with people like Health Education England. And they have an accreditation process that has been in place for longer than I have known about the Health Education England framework. And they...
Yeah.
You can essentially, if you are a radiographer that is a member, so it is a subscription service, but most radiographers I know do it because it's our indemnity insurance as well. You can basically apply through their CPD network. So they have an online CPD platform, which anybody can use. And then through that, you can press a button saying accreditation application. And they've got a few different types. So there's one for education, one for advanced practice, and one for consultant practice. It was quite a long process, so I'm not going to lie and say it was easy. It was very difficult, actually. Like, it took me quite a long time to do. And you essentially have to write a statement of practice. You have to then write a statement of why you should be entitled to the accreditation. So that's, I think it was 2,000 words or 2,500. It was quite a large statement. And then you have to link that statement to 6 pieces of CPD. So you have to upload all your CPD for 2 years and show that you've got a good CPD diary. But then it has to specifically link to 6 pieces. Once you've done all of that, which sounds fairly straightforward, but really does take quite a long time.
Absolutely.
It then has to go through to attestors of your choice. So people that you know at your employer that can say, yes, Emma does do all those things, like she hasn't lied.
Yeah.
So I sent it to my superintendent and my lead consultant.
Yep.
And they basically agreed, or they can say like, oh, you've forgotten you've done this, Emma, or they go through to a tester. So they write a little statement, and then it goes to, there's different boards, and I can't remember what the boards are called, but I think there's 2 boards that it goes through. And so it goes through one board that says, they send it to a assessor, and the assessor will write a statement, and they kind of pick who they think is most appropriate based on your profession and your background. Goes to an assessor, they kind of mark it almost a bit like a university essay. And then they send that through saying, yes, we agree that she fits the pillars. And they do align it to the 4 pillars. And they'll say, yes, she fits the 4 pillars. They'll give some constructive feedback. So, for example, I had some constructive feedback that I passed. For my education example, they were saying, well, we could really do is seeing some feedback from students. So I wrote a lot about my lecturing experience and reflected on that and how I found it hard at first and how I adapted. And then they said that that was really great, but it would have been even better if I'd have included some feedback from the students, because it's all good saying I can lecture, but maybe all the students think I'm rubbish at it. So you kind of need, and I appreciated that feedback.
Yeah.
But they said that I had, you know, achieved the markers. And then it goes to another board who then sign it off and say, yes, this is an accredited advanced practitioner. So it's a long process. It took quite a long time because the boards only meet at certain times of the year. But I do think, and I'm pretty sure from what I know, that amongst the different allied health professions and nursing professions, the Society of Radiographers has done it very well. Because the one thing about it being hard to do means that it's thorough and not yes. everybody can just get it easily. So
yes.
I think that they have made it, it's done very well. It's very well aligned to the four pillars. It was very clear that I had to achieve the right status in all of the four pillars, not just saying I can do. The site radio officers are very good at distinguishing between advanced practice and extended roles or enhanced practice. So that's something that I think it's very well done. I think that it was hard, but that's a good thing. If that
absolutely sense. Yeah, and I think you're right. I think a lot of places struggle to distinguish it because there's so much overlap that people struggle to kind of define when you cross that line from extended into advanced. So it'd be really nice to kind of hear kind of how radiographers look at supervision and mentorship and kind of what you have in place, whether that's specific to radiography or if that's specific to Great Ormond Street.
I have quite a lot of thoughts on this actually, but obviously when I'm speaking about it, it's from my experience, so I can't say for every radiographer ever, but I do think that supervision has been something that has been challenging at times because advanced practice, especially in interventional radiology, is quite new. There hasn't been necessarily very much clear guidance, not when I first started, on how to supervise and what to do. And I would say to anyone that's starting out, there is much better guidance now. And full credit to my team that look after me, that they have put so much work into looking up how to supervise a radiographer, identifying gaps that we had. So my department have been phenomenally supportive and have done a lot of work into looking all of that guidance up. Sometimes I'll go into their office and I'll just see a Health Education England document on the side, and they've obviously been reading about it. So yeah, they've worked really hard. So I think that we have found a few barriers, but hopefully we've kind of worked out some ways of overcoming them, which might be helpful for people. So one thing is, when you're doing reporting radiography, for example, you can report a chest x-ray and then someone else can report the chest x-ray and say, yeah, you spotted everything I spotted, or you missed this, or here's some feedback. But when you're doing a procedure on somebody, you can't double do the procedure. You can't say, oh, well, I did it like this, you did it like that. So that's something that we found very difficult to audit our practice and things, because how do we double? You can't double do a line for somebody if they need access. So we've made a lot of use of what the doctors are very familiar with, which is DOPS, Direct Observation of Procedural Study, I think the S is. But the DOPS format, so that was actually suggested by our consultants, because that's something that they would assess their junior doctors with. And so we literally just took those. We minorly adapted a couple of the words in it. So for example, it would say level of trainee. So we would change the wording in a few places like that. But essentially, as a tool, that was a very useful tool for us to be like, Emma is doing a PICC line today. I've got this piece of paperwork. Here's the feedback. She could do it unsupervised. She could do it with supervision. Like, she needs to work on this. Like, it was a really useful tool for us. So I would really recommend, in any radiography or any nursing profession or any profession, really, there will be DOPS for whatever the Royal College of the doctor group that you work with have. They all do them. It's a very familiar tool for doctors.
Yep.
And therefore, it's very familiar for them to be able to use them to give us feedback. So I would really recommend.
Yes.
Yeah, whether you work in child health or orthopedics or whichever your body is, they will have a set of DOPS for their juniors, and they work really, really well, actually.
Which I think is a really good point, because I think obviously if you're asking someone from another profession to supervise another profession, I think they can have some kind of reservations because they worry that they don't know how to supervise that individual from a different profession. But if you're speaking the same language, it kind of really helps to understand. So do you find that makes you engage a little bit more in kind of supervised practice to get that feedback for the DOPS? How do you kind of structure that?
So I've recently started supervising another radiographer. Our model is working well that we're expanding, which is good progression for me, and it's useful for her. And so for her, because she's new, we sort of start with observing. So they'll come, they'll observe the procedure. Then it's kind of assisting. So they'll help do the procedure. Then they do it with me assisting. So we do, it's called like the stepping back model, I think, where you kind of, they slowly do it. Because our procedures are generally sterile, that actually provides a really useful stepping back procedure, because we can be scrubbed and ready to help, but but just maybe sit on a stool at the edge. Mm-hmm. And then we can sit on the stool, yeah, but not scrubbed, which adds in that we're right there for the person verbally, mm-hmm, but we can't be as hands-on to help them. So it gives them the opportunity to practice. Then we might sit in what we call the control room. So we can't really hear them, mm-hmm, but we're right there if they need us. And then we might sit down the corridor. And so you kind of step back that supervision.
Yeah.
I think it's really good early on in a trainee or someone starting to look at the person's background and to learn,
yeah,
how they got to that stage. Because one thing that we really identified at ours, which it took us a while to identify, but it became quite apparent, is that as radiographers particularly, we're not taught at any point to, okay, have difficult conversations with patients. If, mm-hmm, anything, we're actually taught the opposite. So we might take a chest x-ray and see some horrendous mass, but we're not allowed to say anything. We have to say, oh, the report will be with you. So we're taught, mm-hmm, to not say things. So then when something you have to face when you're doing advanced practices, you will, mm-hmm, get a complication at some point and have to have a conversation with a family or a patient about that. Mm-hmm. We were finding that very difficult because we hadn't had any training, teaching. Mm-hmm. We found it upsetting at times. And so one of our consultants, we had a bit of an epiphany all of a sudden one day that that wasn't something radiographers had learnt. So she now set up a kind of mini in-house course that she calls Difficult Conversations.
Amazing.
And so she's worked really hard with our sim team. And we set up simulations, and it's to do with staff and patients and families. Like, it's not just patients.
Yep.
Of how to help us with some phrasing, and we run scenarios.
I think that's a really great example people can take away with about practical things that they can do. So for example, one is DOPS, but one is if you find that weakness or that area that you feel like you want more development in, sim is quite, it's becoming bigger and bigger and people are seeing more research and benefit of it. What a great opportunity to practice and enhance those skills in a really safe way. I think what you talked about for supervision is really valuable. Is there anything else that you've kind of learned along the way or anything that you're doing within your area?
I think one really important part of supervision is the governance side of things, because a lot of the time I do have in the back of my head, like, what's the worst case scenario that could happen? And so we always have that in the back of our mind, because complications are a real risk. They are a real thing that could happen or will happen if you do enough procedures and enough advanced practice. And so we have that a lot about governance. So a lot of stuff is about signing people off when they're appropriate and making sure that we have got the documentation in place and that we have, I think, recording your supervision meetings is very important. Having them, but having no evidence that you have had them is not enough. I think it can still be informal, go and have a coffee and have a chat about how people are, but you do need to then have, even if it's a paragraph of a quick meeting minute of saying, we met, this person has no problems, we're working on this, or, you know, I think that's very important as well. And I think the regular contact is the biggest take-home message I would give people.
And I think, again, that's something that's so simple that everybody can take away, yeah, to, you know, at least start or improve on their kind of supervision journey as well, isn't it? Can we just touch on, you were talking about a kind of like a community of practice that you started. What exactly is that and what information could you give us?
So that was through the Society of Radiographers. I just kind of realised that there was a gap really in, so they have special interest groups through the society. And I noticed that there was a bit of a gap because I was sat being like, I can't be the only person that does this. And I think my managerial structure was asking me to do a job plan. And I was like, well, I don't know where to start. I need to ask someone else, but I don't know who to ask. And so that's why I set it up. So they put a little advert in the kind of magazine that comes out. And I think there's 80 or 90 members now across the country, which, wow, is amazing. And it's really helped build this community. So sometimes people will just pop up being like, I'm about to start doing these joint injections. What local anaesthetic do people use? And how do you, yep, get signed off for using it? Is it under a PGD? Sitting back and watching the discussion forum is so, it's not super active. It doesn't go off every day, but it's really nice to see that we're able to support each other. And there are some consultant radiographers on there who are much more established, have really robust job plans. And for example, one of those guys sent me their job plans. Practical tip. So I'd really advocate joining Twitter actually as well. I think it can be very, you can make a lot of networks and you can learn. I've learned about study days before that I only found out via Twitter and things like that. So I would encourage people to join.
great tip, I think, for people definitely to use. What's your Twitter if people want to find you on Twitter?
I am PAED, P-A-E-D underscore IR underscore RAD.
Amazing. Wonderful. Any final comments?
I would really encourage people to push the boundaries of their practice. If you are someone that is an adult putting in pics, then ask if you can go and learn to do Hickman lines, or, you know, like, push the boundaries of your practice. And if the people aren't sure, then say, well, there's people at Great Ormond Street doing this, like, we can get in touch, share their models, like, don't be afraid to get in touch with people, because people like me, I love it when people contact me. I'm always like, oh, it makes me feel nice and useful. So message people on Twitter, drop people emails, or even if you just message on Twitter saying, I'd love to ask you a question, what's your work email? Ask, because you won't know if you don't ask.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you so much. And thank you for coming on the podcast. That was Emma Rays from Great Ormond Street Hospital.